Lane kept his eyes on Reacher's face and put his hands on the chair arms, palms down, pale parchment skin ridged with tendons and veins ghostly in the yellow light. He levered himself upright with an effort, like it was the first time he had moved in 9 hours, which it probably was. He stood unsteadily and walked toward the lobby, stiffly, shuffling like he was old and infirm. "Jam," he said, like a command, like the colonel he had been. Reacher followed him to the master bedroom suite, the pencil post bed, the armoire, the desk, the silence, the photograph. Lane opened his closet, the narrower of the two doors. Inside was a shallow recess and then another door. To the left of the inner door was a security keypad. It was the same type of 3x3+0 matrix as Lauren Pauling had used at her office. Lane used his left hand, index finger curled, ring finger straight, middle finger straight, middle finger curled. 3785, Reacher thought. Dumb or distracted to let me see. The keypad beeped and Lane opened the inner door, reached inside and pulled a chain. A light came on and showed a chamber maybe 6 feet by 3. It was stacked with cube-shaped bales of something wrapped tight in heavy, heat-shrunk plastic. Dust and foreign printing on the plastic. At first, Reacher didn't know what he was looking at. Then he realized. The printing was French, and it said Banque Centrale, Central Bank. Money. U.S. dollars, bricked and banded and stacked and wrapped. Some cubes were neat and intact. One was torn open and spilling bricks. The floor was littered with empty plastic wrap. It was the kind of thick plastic that would take real effort to tear. You would have to jam a thumbnail through and hook your fingers in the hole and really strain. It would stretch. It would part reluctantly. Lane bent at the waist and dragged the open bale out into the bedroom. Then he lifted it and swung it through a small arc and let it fall on the floor near Reacher's feet. It skidded on the shiny hardwood, and 2 slim bricks of cash fell out. "There you go," Lane said. "Dime one." Reacher said nothing.
"Pick it up. It's yours."
Reacher said nothing, just moved away to the door.
"Take it."
Reacher stood still. Lane bent down again and picked up a spilled brick. He hefted it in his hand. $10,000, 100 hundreds.
"Take it."
Reacher said, "We'll talk about a fee if I get a result."
"Take it!"
Lane screamed. Then he hurled the brick straight at Reacher's chest. It struck above the breastbone, dense, surprisingly heavy. It bounced off and hit the floor. Lane picked up the other loose brick and threw it. It hit the same spot.
"Take it!"
he screamed. Then he bent down and plunged his hands into the plastic and started hauling out one brick after another. He threw them wildly, without pausing, without straightening, without looking, without aiming. They hit Reacher in the legs, in the stomach, in the chest, in the head. Wild, random salvos, $10,000 at a time, a torrent, real agony in the force of the throws. Then there were tears streaming down Lane's face, and he was screaming uncontrollably, panting, sobbing, gasping, punctuating each wild throw with, "Take it! Take it!" Then, "Get her back! Get her back! Get her back! Then, please! Please!" There was rage and pain and hurt and fear and anger and loss in every desperate yelp. Reacher stood there, smarting slightly from the multiple impacts, with hundreds of thousands of dollars littered at his feet, and he thought, "Nobody's that good of an actor." He thought, "This time it's real." Chapter 27. Reacher waited in the inner hallway and listened to Lane calm down. He heard the sink running in the bathroom. Washing his face, he thought. Cold water. He heard the scrape of paper on hardwood and the quiet crackle of plastic as the bale of cash was reassembled. He heard Lane drag the bale back into the inner closet. He heard the door close and he heard the keypad beep to confirm it was locked. Then he walked back to the living room. Lane followed a minute later and sat down in his chair, quietly, calmly, like nothing at all had happened, and stared at the silent phone. It rang just before 7:45. Lane snatched it out of the cradle and said, "Yes!" in a voice that was a shout, strangled to almost nothing by sheer tension. Then his voice went blank, and he shook his head in impatience and irritation. Wrong caller. He listened for 10 seconds more and hung up. "Who was it?" Gregory asked. "Just a friend," Lane said. "A guy I reached out to earlier. He's had his ear to the ground for me. Cops found a body in the Hudson River this morning, a floater. at the 19th Street boat basin. Unidentified white male, maybe 40 years old, shot once.
Taylor?
Has to be, Lane said. The river is quiet up there, and it's an easy detour off the West Side Highway at the boat basin. Ideal for someone heading north.
Gregory asked, so what do we do?
Now, Lane said, nothing. We wait here. We wait for the right phone call. The one we want. It never came. 10 long hours of anticipation ended at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the phone did not ring. It did not ring at 8:15, or 8:30, or 8:45. It did not ring at 9 o'clock. It was like waiting for a stay of execution from the governor's mansion that never came. Reacher thought that a defense team with an innocent client must run through the same range of emotions. Puzzlement, anxiety, shock, disbelief, disappointment, hurt, anger, outrage, then despair. The phone did not ring at 9:30. Lane closed his eyes and said, not good. Nobody replied. By 9:45 in the morning, all the resolve had leaked out of Lane's body, like he had accepted something inevitable. He sank into the chair cushion and laid his head back and opened his eyes and stared up at the ceiling. It's over, he said. She's gone. Nobody spoke. She's gone. Isn't she? Nobody answered. The room was totally silent, like a wake, or the blood-stained site of a fatal and tragic accident, or a funeral, or a service of remembrance, or an ER trauma room after a failed operation, like a heart monitor that had been beeping bravely and resolutely against impossible odds, had just abruptly gone quiet. Flatline. At 10 o'clock in the morning, Lane raised his head off the back of the chair and said, okay. Then he said it again. Okay. Then he said, now we move on. We do what we have to do. We seek and destroy as long as it takes, but justice will be done. Our kind of justice. No cops, no lawyers, no trials, no appeals. No process, no prison, no painless lethal injections. Nobody spoke. For Kate, Lane said, and for Taylor. Gregory said, amen.
All the way, Groom said.
Like always, Burke said.
Perez nodded, to the death.
I'm there, Addison said. I'll make them wish they had never been born, Kowalski said.
Reacher checked their faces. 6 men, less than a rifle company, but with a whole army's worth of lethal determination.